Magic, music, British and women, TAOM 2015. Austin.
Well, good morning. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. We're at the beginning of day number two here on Saturday, the 5th, I believe it is, of September. I'm here with two people.
There are two of us here.
As opposed to the rest of
us. But with you, Scott, it's three of us
now. These are people.
We're a trio.
And we're people.
We are people.
And
that's right.
People.
As David Hira, past international, just past president.
Past president. TAOM 1997 for our 50th anniversary convention.
Who preceded me by just a few years.
I know.
That's right. And it was fun. I thought that was a great convention that you had, almost as good as mine. But you gave away watches. That was cool.
We gave away a lot of stuff. And we had Tommy Wonder.
I remember. You said, I don't care who we have, but Tommy, number one, you said whatever, and then the rest is going to be ancillary.
We had James Damir, and we had...
James Damir that was off the hook crazy.
And we had the first onstage party at afterwards.
It was the first
presidential party.
And Rudy Colby, that's right, and everybody was there.
Rudy was there,
it was a big surprise
at the end, and the band came up from the orchestra pit, and it was great.
And everybody came up on stage, because it was in the theater. It was in a legitimate theater.
Yeah, legitimate theater, and then we had everyone come on stage, and people had never been on stage. And you have to remember, with a convention, a lot of people are people who want to be on a stage like that, who never had the chance yet, and so that was their chance, and that's what was the truth.
Right, and all the illusions, everything were off, and all the curtains were pulled, so everybody got to come up, and it was just
okay. So enough about the past.
And
let's
so
talk about the present and future. I used to be somebody, Scott.
No, I understand from also what was said last evening that Mark Merchant, who was the ventriloquist, saying you were the top corporate performer in America, and I should ask you if that's the truth, because just asking, they said, was it?
Do you want to know the story behind that?
Okay, sure.
The story is that Bobby Bax called me and he says, I'm coming in and I need a bowling ball for a gag and I need a saw for a gag. And he said, could you help find one? I said, I have both of them with me. I'll bring them.
So his, and I bought those at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So his thanks to me was that he told Mark Merchant to do a joke about me the show. So that,
okay.
that's how that happened. So
that's
what,
how your name got
but
dropped.
What I'm
but
doing,
it is true.
Yeah, of course it's true. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, thank you very much.
But don't tell anyone this. Don't tell anyone this, but I'm going to work with the MC tonight and tomorrow, and I'm going to tell them to also give a reference so that it becomes the running gag.
It is? Well, there should be some sort of a theme in running
gag. Yes, it's going to be a running gag.
That's good. Well,
I hope.
Who you should talk to is someone who's going to be like in the close-up show, perhaps, and someone who might be standing next to us now, and you're wondering who the second person is who I'm talking to. This is Suzanne, the magician.
Yay.
Hello there.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi.
Good to see you again since Jacksonville and everything then, too. And so, yeah, you ought to say something. You're in close-up content or the show, aren't
in
you?
The show. In the
is that today or tomorrow?
That is today, starting at 4:30.
Well, you can say I got this deck of cards from corporate magician David Hira.
Who I understand is the
best. They said best. The best.
That was the best. Yeah.
Yeah, the best corporate performer. Just ask him.
Yes. Best corporate performer. Just ask him.
Something like that. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I think that's funny. That's one way of kind of getting in, isn't it? Okay, here's your money.
$20.
You know what? Here, I'll do it for free.
Oh, well, that's here. So, Scott, give me that 20 back. Hey, that's mine. All right,
that's right. Suzanne, you've been kind of every place. I mean, you were Jacksonville and you were here. And have you done other conventions this year or others you have after
let's
this?
Let's see.
Or?
I have kind of lost count. I can only keep track of where I am at the time. Except for I do know that I'm going to be doing the Trix Convention in North Carolina in November.
How large of a convention is that? I'm not familiar with that.
I don't know. I've never been there.
That's one I've not been
to. Yeah,
this
is the first time that I've been invited, and
that's not the one that Scott Robinson puts. It is?
Yeah.
Okay, that's kind of a close-up convention
thing. Yeah.
Okay, it is a smaller convention. Great. I've heard good things about that. I've been wanting to go to that for a while. I just haven't had the time.
Come to this one.
I should, except I'm not booked for that.
I've heard rumor that you're going to see Suzanne on television coming up soon.
Really? In Las Vegas or where?
I'm not privy to tell.
Where was that filmed? Well, she's here right now. Let's ask her.
It was filmed in Vegas. So Penn and Teller Fool Us on October.
Penn and Teller Fool Us, you were on that?
Yeah. On October 5th.
Okay. And I'm guessing you did a close-up trick.
I did do a close-up trick.
Yeah, as opposed to bringing in Big Illusion, like some of these guys are doing mentalism or whatever. So.
Well, a close-up trick.
Big Illusion's like mentalism.
Yeah.
A close-up trick for me is a big illusion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm...
You're
not
small
big.
In stature.
That's right. Oh, there's a way.
Oh, small in stature.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I like that.
Yes, you're.
But she is a statuesque woman.
Oh, wow.
But small in stature. Statuesque woman who is small in stature. Maybe that's a new tagline for you.
So for the remaining people still listening to the podcast.
Who cares? That's right. But also, those of you who don't know, of course, that Suzanne had won the Close-Up Magician of the Year for the Magic Castle a couple of years ago.
In 2010, yeah.
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 Congratulations
you.
To you. That's fantastic. Yes, well, see, yeah. You're learning more
honor.
Things all the time.
I cried and everything.
You were not expecting that, obviously,
no,
at all.
No, I did not expect
when they called
that
you, it's just like the Academy Awards, I guess.
I know,
you know,
right. I was up against some really amazing guys.
Mm-hmm.
So
just, I'm curious, what do you attribute that you won that? I mean, what do you know happened that just tipped, that made you go over the edge?
I think part of it is that I'm liked. You know, so there's a popularity thing.
There is that.
You have to have chops to get to that point, but if people don't actually like you as a person, they're not going to vote for you. So I think it's...
So you're saying you're likable.
I try to be likable.
You're charismatic. You are charismatic.
I try to be likable.
Yeah. Okay.
She's got a gleam in her eye, you know, you know.
After being up till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, is that what it is? I was up there too. I was in the bar also until they finally closed
till
it there last
two?
Night. Yes.
Wow. You and I, we weren't partying.
Well, I was partying with some other guys. In fact, I'm glad you mentioned that's a good entree. There were two guys who were patrons of the Magic Word podcast who donate to the podcast. And so we were having some scotch at the bar. I had Brandon Hudgens and Fred King, both of whom are contributors, which you could be also if you guys donate to The Magic Word. Just go to themagicwordpodcast.com or to patreon.com/themagicword, and you can learn how to donate as well. But I want to thank those guys also for being patrons. So, enough of that little commercial message. we were up having some scotch.
Having some scotch. So you and I, we have to have some Lagavulin this trip.
That's right. Did you bring Lagavulin with you?
I did not.
Okay.
They
got here, they don't have really top shelf. They do have some... some 12-year-old Macallan, I think.
Okay, that's not
no,
bad.
They got a good single malt.
They also have some 12-year-olds from Macallan.
Oh.
Yeah, they're here, too. They just watched Oscar Munoz a moment ago. It was great.
That's right. I saw the line of children come
exactly,
out of that room.
Sorry, it was a Glenlivet. It was a Glenlivet 12-year-old.
We're Scottish, as I recall.
So they are. So let's talk just a moment about yesterday's show and then things. So did you guys got to see the show last evening and everything? And so what were your general overall comments about, you know, we had the dealer show, and then we had the lectures by J. Scott Berry, and then last evening, of course, the Brian Brushwood and everything. Any comments, or what do you think? How's it going?
I actually didn't get to see the show because I got here late, and then I had to have dinner and unpack and stuff like that. So I didn't get to see the show.
Did you see the Brian's afterwards?
I did not.
Okay. All right. Well, we won't talk with you about
this. No, I just sat and drank. I sat and drank.
You were in the bar, okay. David, you were here for a
while. I will tell you, I saw the main show, and I thought it was really, really fun. For a Friday night show, it was you know, one of those better shows in TAO history that happened. And so, but I'll say the highlight, of course, was Bobby Bax doing the famous linking ring routine. As the Maven.
My wife's favorite.
Raven, I should say. Yeah, it was
Edgar
so much
Allan
fun.
Poe,
yeah,
take off.
It was great. It was great. And Bob Fitch, you know, that was just a treat. It's just a treat to watch him work. I mean, it just is. It's just a treat. And that's a memory I'll just carry forever.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That was really beautiful.
I'm looking forward to his lecture here shortly. He did a private workshop that was extra an event yesterday afternoon, just as John Carney's going to be doing one on Monday morning. But he's going to be giving his free lecture here, Bob Fitch will, shortly. So, kind of looking forward
to that. Are the highlights. There's a lot of great performers on the evening, no doubt about it. But I'm just saying those are the two things that really stood out.
Well, that's what I want to know. So I got to sit out.
Yeah.
And so, well, we will talk with you guys in later to find out what stood out today.
Excellent.
Very
great.
Good. Thank you very much.
I'm going to go and host one of the rooms for the close-up contest.
Awesome.
And I'll be the MC this afternoon for the patriotic tribute that's going to happen. We're going to have six lectures come into a rapid-fire lecture.
Who's going to be on that, do you know?
Yeah, a bunch of guys. And...
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
I'm one of them.
You are on that.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, it's one of those things that's just not in my memory right now. But the thing is that this whole last year, J.D. Stewart has gone around and he's captured a lot of magicians doing a teach a trick thing on video. And that DVD of I can't remember, 19 different magicians is going to be sold at the end of this, and every bit of that is going to go to Heroes Night Out, which, as we know, is the local
kind of a disabled veterans kind of a...
Exactly, and it's a whole resource center. So it's a place where they can go relax. It's a place where they can go find out about insurance and all this other good stuff. Anyway, all of that proceeds, and this whole whole TAOM is dedicated, of course, to Heroes Night Out. And the founders of that organization will be here also. So we're going to have a really great patriotic opening. It's going to be from our heart to thank our veterans that have been part of this group, too.
It's going to be like a two-hour thing or something. It's a pretty...
That's about an hour and a half, you know.
Okay.
Well, you're on it, so it's going to be 2 hours.
Yeah.
It'll be 2 hours, yeah.
So, I do talk.
But the point is that that DVD and all the proceeds are going to go to benefit that, and I couldn't be more excited to be hosting them.
You might be interested. I'm going to be talking about restaurant magic.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
You got some of my tips going in there, right?
Yeah, I've got
and
your notes.
Of restaurant magic, you know, do go to my Facebook and look at all the great, fabulous food I've been eating again.
Yes, you
that's
have.
All
I enjoy it. Yes, you do. It seems like because you're the top corporate magician in the
that's
U.S., so you go to these different places.
Word is on the street here at TAO.
Okay. That was David Hirons and Suzanne for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out.
Music, weirdness, and women. TAOM 2015.
Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And as we continue on here on day number two, I'm going to talk with one of the performers in last night's Scam School with Brian Brushwood, Mr. Diamond Jim Tyler. Hey, Diamond
Hey,
Jim.
Hey, what's up, gang?
Good to have you over here. Then it's wonderful.
Yeah, I love being in Austin.
Yeah. Because you're actually not too far away. You're only in Dallas, which is just a couple hours away. I mean,
yeah,
of course, Texas is a hop, skip, and jump. Now, how long have you been an affiliate, or when did you start doing some stuff with Brian for Scam School?
Oh, gosh. It's been several years now. We used to just consult, and he would use some ideas for the show.
Yeah.
And then eventually he was like, you should just be on the show. And so I remember the first time he flew me to San Francisco. A few years back, it might have been 4 or 5. I don't even know. So now I think I'm the most regular guest on the show. We've done about 20 episodes. We filmed 3 a couple of nights ago.
Yeah.
And
how often does he produce that? I mean, is it a weekly, a monthly, or how?
It comes out every Wednesday night.
Yeah.
At like midnight. And he does one every week. And so usually when we shoot, we'll shoot 4 or 5 episodes. When we do this, so.
Sorry, just a quick little waylay there. We had to, he was signing autographs, you know. There where he goes, this man is just famous. Somebody say, hey, we gave you your autograph. So, sorry for that little break. So, you were saying that he does this weekly.
Well, the show comes out weekly, but typically we shoot 4, 5, 6 episodes in a night, mm-hmm. so we can get a lot in the can, because Brian performs a lot and travels, and
sure,
so he has to knock out as many as he can.
When he can.
And also, too, they spend a lot of time in, you know, post-production, you know, editing and things like that, so it takes them a while to release these episodes.
Mm-hmm. And so the type of things that you typically will be performing are just bar bets, things from
puzzles, impromptu magic, mm-hmm. yeah, things like that.
Now, you've been collecting these for a number of years. They've been things that you have researched. I mean, at some point, it's kind of like, wow, I've reached the end of my imagination. I mean, how do you just reach out and get more?
Yeah, I grew up working, in a magic shop and doing restaurant magic, and did restaurant magic for about 20 years straight, and mm-hmm. I was doing several nights a week. And so strangers would show me things all the time.
Oh, really?
So I would show them something. They'd want to show me a bar bet or a puzzle.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of collected those things, wrote them down.
Oh, we jotted them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always jotted them down, too. I was always a big fan of Martin Gardner's work, mm-hmm. you know, like his Encyclopedia of Impromptu Magic, probably my favorite book on magic ever.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much in it. About 500 pages, and every page has 10 different, you know, impromptu bits on it.
That's a good recommendation. I think that's a very good book also.
Yeah.
And so as you do that, do you continue to find new stuff, or people now they send you ideas? I mean, since you're kind of known for this.
Sometimes they do. And in my travels, you know, I'll ask. I'll mm-hmm. say, you know, show me something. Show me a bar bet. Show me a puzzle.
Yeah.
And typically when magicians are sitting around the table, that's the sort of things they do when they have nothing. You know, they'll grab a straw, grab a napkin. Have you seen this? And, you know, usually you think yes. And 99% of the time I have, but once mm-hmm. in a while I'm surprised. And so I've collected enough stuff for probably 6 volumes, so I'm mm-hmm. slowly writing volume 4 now.
And so the kinds of things that you are, when you go out and teach these things, I guess, on Sam's Scam School, then you're showing them, or do they go out into a bar, or do they kind of in the studio?
Yeah,
or
it's kind of neat. Yeah, he'll shoot in a bar, and he'll get a spectator, just someone who's floating around the bar there, and ask, mm-hmm. hey, this is the show, this is what it's about. And we'll do the effect, amaze mm-hmm. them with it, and then we'll teach it to them right then and there. And then they have to perform it for us.
Oh,
so
okay.
It truly is mm-hmm. teaching. It's not, you know, more than exposing, it's teaching. Because this person gets to learn to do it and feel that sense of wonder, what it is to give to someone else. And,
Well, that's the advantage of the con. I mean, when it's a real con, it's something that people don't feel bad about. They didn't feel like they were cheated, but it's kind of like, oh, you fooled me. So it's more being fooled and not being cheated. There's a fine line.
Oh, right.
And so how do you... endear yourself then to someone so that way that they don't feel that they were cheated? It's kind of like, oh, this guy was a friend, and oh, you got me. You know, keep the money, or here's a beer.
Yeah. How do you? Normally I don't use it to hustle drinks or money. You know, mm-hmm. It's just...
Well, I know in Scam School that when I've listened and talked with Brian, that's kind of one of the things that he tries to go say, hey, you can get a beer out of this. You know, be sure and...
Yeah, but you know what's funny is Brian is the one that always buys the beers for everyone.
But he makes it look like...
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
So...
Funny. So... Not that you have ever scammed people for money, but these are ways of doing it. And making some money.
Not that I'm going to report on record.
Exactly. There are only a couple dozen people listening, so don't worry. So anything that you got in mind right now, your next project, of course, could be Bamboozlers 4.
Well, it's actually not the next project. I have about 10 ahead of it.
Okay.
So Bamboozlers is a labor of love.
Yeah.
And I don't make as much money selling those books mm-hmm. as I do my other products.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other things are so easy to knock out. It's so easy to record a DVD and mm-hmm. have something made than it is to write a book and have it illustrated
oh, sure.
and edited.
It takes
and,
years.
And so, mm-hmm. yeah.
It is certainly a lot different. So
I'm being heckled all around.
<what's that? laughs> There's Fumio and Jay Zugai. Hey, guys.
Hey.
So the other projects and things you got working on, I'm going to be helping set up a lecture tour this next
yes,
year, 16.
Yeah, so. And it looks like I have other tours for next year mm-hmm. as well. China, mm-hmm. Germany. Doing a Canadian tour, mm-hmm. so next year is going to be the year of tours.
And you got some conventions you're going to work? You got a book for next year or not?
Nothing planned so okay. far, mm-hmm. But yeah, pretty much 50% of 2016 is booked.
What's been your biggest seller of anything? I mean, including like your DVDs, your tricks, your...
The Bamboozler books do really well, and they're
in the general public,
several
perhaps,
printings.
Too.
That's mm-hmm. true, because mm-hmm. I do sell them at the back of the room after shows sometimes. Mm-hmm. But probably my first... DVD, you know, Pockets Full of Miracles, which mm-hmm. was also my first book.
Book, right.
It's probably my bestseller, only because there's 23 effects on the DVD, mm-hmm. so they get a lot of, you know, bang for their buck.
A lot of material, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. I may have asked you this before, but I'm going to ask again because it sometimes changes. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would be your magic word? What's your philosophy of life? It could be a sentence or a phrase or a word or what's important to you. What's your magic word?
Just one word?
No, it could be a phrase. It could be a sentence. I mean, a feeling. What do you wake up? What gives you the charge, the energy each day to put one foot in front of another?
I don't know. I mean, I think we kind of hit on the point earlier about, you know, people don't want to be scammed or fooled, but mm-hmm. they don't mind being fooled by a gentleman.
Oh, good.
So.
Yeah. And that should relate to other magicians as well. Because,
right.
yeah, probably fooled. That's, don't be mind being fooled by a gentleman.
Right.
Thank you very much. And that was a gentleman, Diamond Jim Tyler, for the Magic Word Podcast.
Magic, Scotty out. Music, weirdness, and women. TAOM 2015.
Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. And I have with me Mr. Ramon Galindo, who was not only one of the past presidents of the Texas Association Magician, but also one who had pioneered the field in parakeet magic. Didn't you? You know, pretty much. And you were well known as a tailor of making all the pockets and everything for bird, doing bird magic, dove magic and parakeets.
Yes, I did make a lot of, you see, I was a tailor by trade, so I did make a lot of, topics and
yeah.
uniforms, suits and tuxedos.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
And how did you first come up with the idea of using parakeets instead of doves? Now, Cantu was the one I think started with doves. Did you know Cantu by chance, or Channing Pollock, or those guys?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. You know, I was small. My father was working for Dr. Girdlewood in Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a big walk-in cage full of parakeets.
Mm-hmm.
And I would look at those parakeets. I was small. I'd look at those parakeets, and I said, I hope someday I'll own some.
Mm-hmm.
But it was many years after that I still got into magic and started working with doves, ducks, and rabbits and stuff like mm-hmm. that.
Livestock, yeah.
And then I said, well, I better do something different now. Everybody's getting into doves. So I went back, I started out with parakeets.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I did because one interesting thing about it, I went to visit in Las Vegas. And there at the hotel, that was exactly there, a friend of mine I went to see, and he said, Ramon, he says, I want to introduce you to Siegfried and Roy. Mm-hmm. I said, you know him? He said, yeah, we're on the same show. Mm-hmm. So he went, he introduced me to him. We went into the room one day, and he said, do me a trick.
Siegfried said this.
Siegfried
to you?
Yeah. Said, do me a trick. So I was good with thimbles. So I started doing thimbles real close up. He said, I can't believe it. I didn't see him. Do it again. I will do it again. And real close showed my hands back and forth.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I can't see. You're going to have to show me before you leave. He said, you show me before you leave.
Yeah.
And I said, I'll promise you, I'll show you. But I said, I'm not at ease with this big tag behind me.
That's and, right. They got said, them guarding the
they
door.
They won't bother you.
Yeah.
I said, wait a minute. He said, no, they're not going to bother you. So I did that. Did that for him. And he never did forget it.
Uh-huh.
Siegfried, and I had a black and white picture with Tuxedo as a magician. And he looked at it. He said, I do not like it. I said, what do you mean? I do not like it. I said, well, what's wrong with it? He said, I just don't like it. I said, all right, well, okay, what do you suggest? He said, remember, you're a Mexican, dress up like a Mexican with tuxedo, I mean with a charro hat,
yes,
a sarape on. He says, do what the, how do you call it, cantu.
Yes.
He said, do what he did. And I said, well, you know, okay, you're right, I am a tailor. He said, yes, you can make it. You don't have to pay anybody to do it for
right.
you. He said, you said everything, pockets and everything in the right position. I was going to Japan, and I come back, and I kept thinking about it. 1 year later, I finally decided to go ahead and make that costume.
Yeah.
And then I made the second one. Then I made the third one.
Now, what year would that have been? About 80?
Oh, that was in the early 70s.
70s? Early 70s. Then.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So prior to that, you were just using a standard tuxedo and everything before
yes,
you kind of went with
like
more Mexican kind of a...
Tuxedo or tails, I would use that.
Right.
But it took me a long while to visualize and see myself.
And find yourself.
In a Mexican costume.
Well, you were on the cover of Genie magazine, I think, also, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I was.
That was some years ago.
Yes, I went. You know, I went with Ron Carstairs to England.
Yeah.
And we went to the Magic Castle there. And the fellow that he invited me, the president was here in the United States. Organization over there. He said, "When you get there," he said, "I want you to call me." He said, "I'll be there." So I got there. He didn't forget. He said, "Look, I told you I want to show you something." I said, "Fine." So he went up there and opened up his files, and there was a genie with my picture in the front.
That was your cover photo, yeah. What year would that have been? Do you remember approximately?
My mind is...
I want to say it was like maybe 80s.
Somewhere along there.
80, 81, somewhere in there, yeah.
Somewhere along there, yes.
Yeah. Now, did you work with or make some costumes for others? I mean, like Siegfried or for pockets for other well-known magicians?
No, I had made...
Danny Pollock or anybody?
I had made a Mexican lady... costume that she wanted, sort of in that style.
Yeah.
And I made it for her, and she loved it, but I couldn't, getting back to the same thing, I could not picture myself in that. And I thank Siegfried for brainwashing me.
That's funny. Well, now, Rolando, you've lived a very interesting and long and wonderful life and met a lot of people and done a lot of things. You've got, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so my question would be, what would be your magic word? What is it that you live by? What is it that has given you a long life? What's important in your life? It doesn't have to be a word. It could be a phrase. What's your philosophy of life for long life? What do you?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that because I used to ask my father, why did he eat so slow?
Yeah.
And he says, Ramon, you have to chew your food. Don't just swallow it. Chew it real fine.
Yeah.
He said, remember, all the young kids that have been born and growing up, they feed them canned food and ground up real good.
Yeah.
He said, and their stomach doesn't work that much. He said, so... He said, in his case, he said, if you remember to eat slow, your stomach will digest everything.
Interesting.
And I think that's the answer.
To chew your food.
I cannot, I don't hurt any worse.
Yeah.
My legs, my bones don't hurt.
Now, how old are you now?
94.
94.
Yes.
Yeah.
My legs don't hurt, nothing like that.
Yeah.
And the doctor keeps saying, I don't know what you're doing, but keep... Keep doing what you are doing.
Yeah. Because it's obviously working
over here, that too.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, Ramon, it was very good to talk with you over here. Thank you very much for being on the podcast as well. That was Ramon Galindo for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty out.
Magic, music, weirdness, and women. TAOM 2015.
Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. And we are just getting ready for an afternoon session that's going to be for Heroes Night Out, which is a kind of a fundraiser kind of a thing for the local. There's a group of disabled veterans, and it's a support group, and it's kind of hard to explain, but it's something really for the vets, and it's going to be a pull out the stops, let's celebrate our veterans and everything. But I've got with me right now a person who's going to be in charge of the hosting the ceremonies tonight in the all-women show. Is, no, you're not going to be on there? That's
no,
not tonight's show?
No.
Okay, that's going to be... I got Mr. Steve Daly. Hey there,
yeah.
Steve.
Hello, how are you?
So, when are you going to be? I thought you were going to be...
No, I'm just an act in the show.
Okay.
Ali Sheely is going to
be... Yeah, Ali Sheely is going to be the MC, actually, for this evening's show, but you're going to be part of the show.
I am part of the show. A very small part, but a part of the show, yeah.
I think it's going to be fantastic,
it's
of course.
Be fun.
It will be a fun show. Now, you've been coordinating also the Abercorn Dabra and the Abra Clown Dabra or something?
Abercorn Dabra. Actually, in the last 5 years, I produced 8 conventions.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of clown conventions, and then we had a puppet corn, which is for puppeteers.
Yeah.
We've now decided we're going to go just with magic. The magicians are a lot more supportive. Yay, magicians! than the clowns and the puppeteers have been, and I won't lose as much money. So we've got Abercorn Dabber, which is the Midwest's premier magic convention. We've actually grown to the point we get to... Oh, I bring in 10 to 12 major names, and it's a jam-packed 3 days. This next year, 2016, we've got a lot of brand-new things we do every year.
Yeah.
But this next year, we're going to be doing a brand-new contest that is the it's the Midwest Championship of Stage Magic and Midwest Championship of Close-Up Magic. Each of those has cash prizes of $500 and $250 cash, first and second place, and the People's Choice Award. We're also going to be having the first ever in America that's only been done in Blackpool, and we're going to be doing it for America.
Yeah.
And it's the Children's Magician of the Year contest.
Wow.
One winner walks away with over $3,000 worth of magical goodies.
Wow.
It's going to be a big one.
And when's that going to be?
It's May 20th through the 22nd in Des Moines, Iowa, at the Airport Holiday Inn, which is right across the street from the Des Moines International Airport. Conveniently located with 24/7 free shuttle service, which is very important for us conventioneers.
Yeah.
And
well, this is why you called it the Corn Dabber, because it is in Iowa, the corn capital.
Corn Dabber, right.
Yeah,
just because it's actually Ben Ulan, very dear friend of mine, Ben Ulan is the one that came up with that name for me, because I wanted something that said Iowa and said the Midwest,
right.
And we're known for corn, and he's why not Abercorn Dabber?
Well, I remember when you put on the first one, and I thought after that, I said, okay, this is it, I'm not going to do it anymore, and then everybody wanted to do another one.
Oh, it was a huge success, success. I brought in a lot of people. The Des Moines Magic Club, Just Ohio, has run a convention every year for 79 years. And after 79 years, they just financially couldn't do it anymore. Their attendance had dropped down to 24 attendees. That was it for a one-day convention. And of those 24, half of them, 12 of them, were aged 21 and younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw myself as a young farm boy that I always looked forward to that magic convention every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked in those eyes of those kids and I went, I can't let this die. There's just no way. Even though I don't really live in Des Moines anymore, I actually live in Las Vegas, but I go home quite a bit to see family and friends.
Right.
And I can't let this die for these kids because they might be the next one that gets a great career like I've had.
Right.
So we started up for them. And that's what's
And I was going then to Las Vegas then also, because the idea is that you have moved from Midwest to Las Vegas and yes. become a Vegas staple, and you do everything, it seems like. I mean, from nurseries to stage yes. Yeah. casino shows. I mean, yes. you're Mr. Vegas over there.
Well, I don't know about Mr. Vegas, but I am a jack of all trades. I work all different venues. Many times people say, well, I hope you keep them straight as far as which one you're going to be working in. I do work about 260 daycare centers shows a year, which is a full-time job in itself, but I call that my daytime job. Yeah. And then I do two shows a night, six nights a week on the Las Vegas Strip.
And tell me about the zombie show. That's
Zombie's a huge hit. It's the it's the number one adult show in Las Vegas right now. We have won several awards for it. In fact, this coming Tuesday, Adrian Zemed, who was originally on T.J. Hooker, and he was also in Grease 2, some movies, and TV and movie actor. He's going to be stepping in as our lead mm-hmm. in the show. I only do 3 minutes in the show.
Yeah.
I helped with the show. I helped put the show together and so forth, and I didn't plan on being in the show, but the producer, I've worked for that family for 20 years now there in mm-hmm. Vegas, and he says, I want you in this show. That was in December. We opened December 13th, 2013. Yep, so we're going on almost 2 years now, and we're sold out every show. It's amazing to me. Tickets are $70 to $100 a pop.
And your picture is in the promos and everything, too.
Yeah.
You have a small part, but you have
very small part.
But you're seen.
Everyone seems to remember me. I don't know. But then again, I play the big girl in a burlesque show, so everyone seems to remember the big girl. I don't know why, but they do. But we've got a 7-piece live band. We've got 8 singer dancers. We also feature Turf from America's Got Talent. He's a black gentleman who does the contortion dancing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing, amazing act. And myself. And it's a tight, fast-paced hour and 20-minute show. A lot of fun.
And it's on every night, or how many? Just one
every
time?
Night.
Just
we're
one
dark
night.
On Sundays.
Okay.
We're dark
and
on
what
Sundays.
Time? Is that a midnight show? Or?
I know how. We do an 8:30 show, and then we do a 10 p.m. show.
Okay.
So
you really don't have time for any other evening shows. I mean, again, you got the daytime job and then that at night.
Right.
Because
right.
I know you've done other kinds of things, and you were in the Women of Magic and other kinds of stuff.
Showgirls
past,
of Magic. I was in that for 11 years. Yeah. 11 years of Showgirls of Magic. I actually managed a show for 4 of those
years. That's when I think I first met you. Yeah.
I also did Buck Wild at the Sahara for a year. Which was my character was Little Debbie. I was the cutest little cupcake on the Las Vegas Strip. And then I did V, the Ultimate Variety Show. I've done several different shows for years now on up down the Strip.
Well, one of the things also that you're known for, that I respect you for, among so many other things, is how that you mentor a lot of other young magicians. That's and bring them up and teach them about learning, teach them about competing in at magic competitions.
Very much. And really, the push that I've been really pushing with a lot of the young guys and gals both is business. You know, this is a show business. The biggest word in show business is business.
There's a show business.
Unfortunately, a lot of us in magic, we are so hung up on the building and our acts and making it our acts the best and enjoying ourselves on stage, but that's only 10%. You know, 90% of our time is the business. Guys like Alex Ramon has really picked up on that really well. There's a lot of great guys out there that are working that I've had the pleasure of getting to be around them and work with them since they were younger, and to see them all grow is just...
Yeah.
It's a pride.
Yeah, it's like being a father, you know.
Yeah, in a sense, yeah. And I love it. I love watching them succeed, and I'd do anything to help them all succeed. I mean, if I could open up doors for them, I will, right and left, you know.
Yeah,
so.
That's great. Well, listen, I know they're getting ready for the show here in a few minutes, so we're going to rush back over here.
That.
We're just kind of backstage then right now. And so let me ask you then, Steve, that the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So what is your magic word? What is your philosophy of life? It could be a phrase, a sentence.
Oh, dear God.
What's important in your life? What, when you wake up in the morning, what
motivates buffets.
You?
Buffets. I'm a Las Vegas man. I tip the scale at almost 500 pounds. Buffets is the most important thing in my life. Let me tell you, from the time I get up in the morning till before I go to bed at night, buffet. So
one trough to the next.
That's right. Exactly. Welcome to Las Vegas. I tell you what. And we had troughs in Iowa.
Where's the best place in Vegas, by the way?
All of them.
Because it used to be, you know, years ago, back in the mob days, it seems like, you know, there was like $1.99 straight dinner.
But nowadays, I swear it's one kitchen, and they just serve it at all the casinos, the same stuff. So, it's all pretty much the same. But I love them all.
Yeah.
Love them all.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Steve Daly. This is Scott out. Scotty out.
Magic, music, weirdness, and women. TAOM 2015.
Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we have just finished part of the lectures in the afternoon thing with the Heroes Night Out, and one of the lecturers that was performing that you guys probably haven't heard from or seen in a while, had a chance to talk with, is one of internationally known magicians, but also a Texas favorite, Mr. John Cornelius. Hi there, John.
Hello there. Good to see you again.
Glad to have you here on the podcast. That I saw you at Magic Live, but I haven't seen you kind of out at a lot of conventions over the last few years. You've been kind of staying at home or working on some new stuff?
Kind of more or less staying at home, and I'm still working on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few items I'm still putting out. I'm not lecturing or performing anymore.
Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I had met you or spent a little bit of time with you, that it was shortly after that that first episode of Doug Henning when he had the Vanishing Nickel, and that was his first television performance, and you were selling that nickel, and I was here in San Antonio on some business, and so I called you up, and you said, "Oh, come on by, and I'll sell you a nickel," and I came by, and we chatted, and, mm-hmm. and I was showing you a couple of card tricks, and I remember you showing me in your home an impromptu card rise, which still was one of the best foolers to me. I don't know if you remember that. That was had to be how many years ago, but that was really impressive, you know, then to me. But going back to Doug Henning, how did that come about?
I got a call from Charlie Reynolds, who was worked with Doug Henning, I guess his manager, and he said that Doug had heard about this nickel trick and wanted to know if it was for sale, and I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I just put it out on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, Doug wanted to, he had seen it done and wanted to know if he could use it for a special. And I said, sure, that'd be fine. So he ordered like two nickels, and then I sent them off, you know, via mail. And then the next thing I know, the special came on, and that was the very opening trick.
Yeah.
And I went, whoa.
Close up of his hand and showing his hand completely open, front and back, and then I'll close it, and all of a sudden
mm-hmm.
there's a nickel. Yeah.
Yeah, that took a lot of guts
to open a
nationwide special like that.
Yeah. And what year was that? Is that about 70?
Back in the 70s, about 70, 74 maybe, I'm just guessing.
Yeah, it was way back there. Now, after that, I assume since you had just put that out and it was advertised in all the Linky Ring and Genie and everything at the time, sales probably started skyrocketing.
Yeah, I sold quite a few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you say of all the different ideas and things that you've created that that's one of your best sellers, or what would you say is one of your best?
Probably the Perfect Pin.
Perfect Pin.
Or the series of Pin Through Anything. The Perfect Pin. Mm-hmm. was the one that was made out of metal, and it was totally examinable before and after, and you could stick it through a bill and actually see the torn pieces of the bill sticking out, and then when you removed the pin, the torn pieces were gone, the bill was all restored, and you could immediately hand that same pin to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And that took quite a while to, you know, work the whole thing out and get it made up. But I would say I sold more of those than any other trick.
Yeah, and that was like so many other things that have happened with other inventors. Seems like they've had things ripped off, and that's got to be so discouraging and frustrating.
Oh, yeah, especially if you spend, you know, a year working on something,
mm-hmm.
and then they just get a sample of it and send it to China and get it knocked off. And,
yeah.
And half the time, the quality isn't there, and they don't know exactly, you know, what they're doing. They just know, well, these are the dimensions he used, but they don't know all the other little nuances that go into making of the pin. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking to Walter Blaney about that last evening, of course, how, again, frustrating that is. And you put all the blood, sweat, and tears, seems like, into it, and the research and development, and you've invested all of your money and everything. Somebody looks at it and says, oh, that's how it's done. And they can easily make something like that, and that's got to be very discouraging. It seems like that some other inventors have, after a while, said, I'm just not going to do anything else,
mm-hmm.
you know. And have you come to that point from time to time in your career?
That's kind of why I've been laying back for the past, 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
I just, got discouraged, put it that way.
Well, you were always one of my favorite performers, certainly, and had inspired me, unbeknownst to you, you inspired a lot of people, I'm one of them, and I remember seeing the cartoon or cardiographic of Martin Lewis's, and when you had performed that, that was the closest thing to magic I've ever seen. And then you were using a Fism Flash, which you were selling and made and sold for a while. And I guess you came up with the name Fism Flash because you were using that at Fism in the contest?
Yes, I had a complete routine using the Fism Flash, but then a variation of the Fism Flash that to this day I've never disclosed.
And that's the one where that a flash happens inside of a bowl or something.
Yeah,
like that,
in
right?
the bowl, and then you move the bowl to a different spot in the bowl, and then you hold it up in the air, and it's in the bowl. And it's just hard to reconstruct,
right?
To put it that way.
We had a lot of other ideas, and obviously, and another one I remember that I did for a while too was a torn dollar bill routine or something. You put that on a little manuscript as well.
Right, that was using the basic $100 bill switch, but it was a complete routine that I
stand-up
came out
routine,
with. Yeah, stand up routine. You could do at a banquet, and it played really, really good, and it just used the $100 bill switch.
And a thumb tip, and then you're
good to go.
Yeah,
and a thumb tip, and you're ready to go,
And that was a good, 15-minute routine. That was
Actually, about five or six or seven minutes, something
was
like
that all? It seemed like it was a little bit longer. It's a memory.
Well, if you talk slow, you can make it.
I don't talk slow, so about 3 minutes for me, I guess. What was one of the most challenging things that you had come up with an idea, and then you thought, okay, I can do this, and then when you started getting into it, found that this is taking longer than I thought?
Well, maybe the perfect pen and also the thought transmitter. Where they write something down, and then it's inside of the wallet. You close the wallet up, and you can show both sides of the wallet. There's no way you can see what they wrote, but anytime you want, you can immediately see what they wrote.
Yeah,
right in front of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're post-it notes or something. They can. You take off the post-it note and you put it on the outside, and you write something, and then they keep the post-it note with it. Isn't that right, or something?
Yeah. The original was that way. They'd write on a post-it note that was inside the wallet and close the wallet up and put rubber bands around the wallet and then drop it into a Ziploc bag so you couldn't get to it.
Yeah.
But you could still gain the information immediately.
Yeah. I remember going back to the perfect pen again, that whenever you'd introduce this, this was, to me, was at the Winter Carnival in Gatlinburg.
And yeah, that was the very first pen. Yeah.
That's what I thought, the very first pen. That was like a Mont Blanc pen.
Mont Blanc.
Yeah. And I remember when that came out, because I was writing for Magic Magazine at the time, and I was saying, the hit trick of this convention has to be this perfect pen. This is destined for glory, and it was amazing. That was a great, it still is a great trick. I know other people put some little twists and things on, like you said, came with the perfect pen, and I'm trying to think of the gentleman's name, used to be in Chicago, moved out to California, who had, I thought it was his idea of adding the torn pieces in the pen. Do you know who I might be talking about?
Jim Krentz?
Krentz. Yes, Jim. Had he collaborated with you or came back and gave you this idea?
We had both really worked it out independently, but Jim used to demonstrate for me at conventions because I wasn't much for standing around a booth all day.
I remember, you were out taking a
smoke. We'd split a room and we'd kick ideas all the way around. So he helped me a lot. You know, some of the things are maybe he came up with an idea that, and I said, that's good, and then we kick that idea around and improve it. And,
Yeah, Jim was another really sharp guy. Seemed like he had a lot of good routines and everything. Yeah. I kept up with him from time to time. I know he listens to the podcast also. And as when we were talking about Simon Lovell, that he had helped out trying to keep his website available and running. But anyhow, so you are working on some other stuff. And so, again, you really haven't been performing much. But you were also one of Roger Klaus's best friends, and also one of these guys who was known as part of the underground and everything, that in doing that, do you have any stories about Roger that you remember or can tell?
Well, when I first met Roger, it was, I believe it was in San Antonio, where I live, and we're walking to the show, I'm walking to the show, and I see Roger in front of me. So I go up, and I was just a young kid. I said, Mr. Klaus, could you do a trick for me? And I handed him my deck of bicycle cards. He said, sure. And he took them and threw them over this fence into the river. And then I just kept walking. And I was just stunned. And he said, come here. He said, here, use tally hose. That's what all the pros use.
Yeah.
So he gave me the tally hose. And then years later, I came out with the Pinnacle Slate, where it was a slate and things would appear on it, mm-hmm. you know, and you could use it for predictions and stuff. And he said, well, will you give me one? I said, sure, but I'm working on a new frame that's really, really nice, and I'll make you a good one. So I had this real nice frames made, and I was making them up, and I ran across one that looked perfect, but for some reason the material didn't work on it.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than throw it away, I put it in a nice little box and
I
brought it to the convention. And I said, Roger, I got some for you in my room. And he said, comes up and I says, this was the best one that I found out of the whole bunch. I want you to have it. And I opened the box up and there was the slate. He took it out and looked at it and said, oh, that's beautiful. I said, here, wait a minute. Let me show you something on that. I said, you remember when I was 14 years old and you threw my cards over the fence? Well, here's your slate, and I broke it into pieces and threw it into the trash can.
I can imagine the look on his face.
Yeah.
You got me, man.
I got him, yeah.
That's great. Well, John, let me close because asking you one last question. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So what is your magic word? What is it that is your philosophy of life? What do you live by? What's important to you now?
Don't worry. Don't worry about anything. Just...
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I think 90% of what you worry about doesn't ever come to pass. So
yeah.
That was Vernon's philosophy also. He didn't worry about a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably why he lived to be, so old.
Mm-hmm. He did. And may I wish you long life then as well.
All right.
Thanks a lot,
Thank you, my friend.
For the Magic Word Podcast, that was John Cornelius. This is Scotty out.
Magic, music, weirdness, and women. TAOM 2015.
Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me the star of Esther's Follies, and you've heard him on here several times before. If you haven't, go back in the archives and look up Ray Anderson. Here he is.
Hey, Ray.
Hey, how you doing, Scott?
I'm fantastic, and you are a local, and so we are here in your hood.
You are.
And you are going to be doing something special for the group tomorrow night.
That's right. The entire convention is coming to my theater, Esther's Follies, on 6th Street, and we're doing two special shows for the TAOM, which is the first time we've ever done anything remotely like that.
For any group,
For any group, yeah. right. So it'll be very exciting. We have a lot of extra magic in the show from our regular show.
Yeah.
Just to
really heavily weighted towards magic.
Yes, okay. So that everybody's happy for the magic convention.
Uh-huh.
But it's a real full circle moment for me because TAOM is the first convention I ever went to back in 76.
When you were 8 years old.
16, yeah. And so now it's finally come around to everybody coming to me for a change.
That's right. You're not going to here. They're coming to your place.
That's right.
And it's going to be fun. And so during that time, there are going to be other shows going on that Nick Lewin and others are going to.
That's right.
The Magic, right.
That's right. Nick is heading up a show while everyone's at my show. We're halving it up because our theater only holds about 250, 270.
Okay.
And so while those magicians are watching my show, Nick is heading up a show here at the convention. And then those people will bus up and come down for the second show that we do at 9 o'clock. And then we all get together for a giant big, what I hear, a big purple party somewhere.
I've got a purple shirt just bought for this show.
Oh, good. Well, I found a purple shirt in my wardrobe,
well, okay.
So I'll be here. Yeah.
Well, that's going to be something special, too, because I understand that Trixie's got some special surprises, I should say, with people performing and everything
that's
for
right.
the show.
Yeah,
it's
I think
just
it's,
a party.
Right. It's nonstop performing on several different stages within the room, I believe,
yep.
And sort of a Mardi Gras theme,
yes.
I think. And I hear there's lots of different things, not just magic, but
yep.
music
yep.
and dancers and Steve Daly in a turban.
Oh, really?
That's
one thing I've not seen him wear.
Oh, well, I hope I didn't let the cat out of the bag there.
And so this is going to be fun then tomorrow night. So you haven't had a chance, of course, then to attend a lot of these functions because you're working in at Esther's last night.
Right,
tonight.
Yeah.
But have you had a chance to hear any of the lectures or see any of the rest of them?
I saw the dealer show, which I thought was just great. You know, the dealer show is something that you don't see at conventions so much anymore, from what I understand. The only conventions I can ever go to are the ones that are on a Sunday, Monday, Monday, yeah. Tuesday usually.
Right. Like Magic Live.
Right, right. But, because I'm working all the time.
Sure.
But I thought that the dealer show was really such a great thing, and I was very surprised that people don't do that as much anymore. It really gives you an opportunity to kind of see what's available. Sometimes dealer's room, you come in and it's sensory overload, mm-hmm. and so you might not get a chance to see everything, but, you know, some of the best things they show on the dealer show, and I
right.
just think that that's a wonderful idea. TM, I think, has always had the dealer show.
For a long time, that's very true, and I agree that a lot of the conventions have kind of forgotten about that, but that is something that the dealers are able then to say, this is our newest, latest, and greatest, better hurry and get it. I know, for example, Card Shark said, we have only a limited number of these decks or whatever.
Yes, that's right.
Know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, and in fact, the gold decks that Bob Little had, I came and bought two because I knew there were only so many left, and I had some friends that I knew wanted them. So.
Yeah, yeah, and you get a free close-up pad that came with that, too.
Oh, all kinds of stuff. I think I got a squeaker for my mouth and a close-up pad and a couple of other little things.
Yeah, yeah, that's fun. Well, listen, thank you very much, Ray. I appreciate it.
Sure.
We're looking forward to the shows tomorrow evening.
Us, too. We're very much looking forward to it. My whole cast is very excited about having all magicians.
Yeah, awesome. Great. Yeah. For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Ray Anderson and Scotty Allen.
Magic, music, weirdness, and women. TAOM 2050.
This is David Hyra, and I just want to say to Scott that when the Magic Podcast, the Magic Word Podcast began, I just kind of thought, you know, what are you doing? I mean, it was a nice idea, and I just thought, yeah, okay, it's cute. And now years later, I look at this, and I said, what vision did you have? That you have captured these stories and these moments from some of the greats and some people that we just never would have known about both. Mm-hmm. And to have their words and to have their insights is just amazing. But especially now that all these years have passed, these people that I've admired that are now gone, to have this captured, not just their performance video and not just a book, but to hear their voice, to hear their laughter, this is important stuff, and I just want to say I can't say enough, I can't give you enough appreciation, enough accolades, but to say thank you very much for capturing history, archiving the history, and for all of magic for years and years to come, you've really done good. I'm proud of you.
Thank you, David. Those words of encouragement and support that you say from your heart really mean a lot to me. And if many of you out there who are listening feel the same way and you enjoy listening to these podcasts as well, you might consider joining the Friends of the Magic Word and becoming a donor to this podcast. It's easy to do. Just go to themagicwordpodcast.com. You can make a one-time donation through PayPal. There's a little place up at the top of the screen where that you can pledge your one-time donation, or if you'd like to be an ongoing donor for any amount, that you can go to patreon.com/themagicword. That's patreon.com, patreon.com, The Magic Word. And there you can learn more information about how that you can become an ongoing patron of The Magic Word by pledging a monthly payment. However you decide to support us, I certainly do appreciate it. There will be more tomorrow. So for The Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out.